Well, good morning. I'm back. I have an idea, or I've seen something that I'm kind of excited about, and I want to share it with you. And anyway, I keep rewriting this constantly in my head. I want to talk to you about free practice. Now, this is it's a martial art type thing, and but I'm not really interested in that side of it. Well, I am, but not right now. If I'm going to learn how to do something, I have to do it. I mean, I can stand there and watch somebody do something, and while they're doing it, I'm looking at the ant that's walking across, you know, something else, and you know, if we're just sitting there, I mean, I like listening to all the lessons, and I like going to seminars and stuff like that, but a lot of time it kind of skips off the top of my brain and just keeps sailing off into the universe. And so a lot of times I have a hard time remembering what somebody said other than, oh, I really liked Charles's talk last week, but I couldn't tell you what it was about this week. So I'm a hands-on type person, and I'm also, I think, an introvert, maybe a odd one, but I'm an introvert. So I don't particularly like putting myself out there. And anyway, so that being said, one of the things they say in this free practice is visualize getting your results. So you're pretending, I mean, you're practicing, right? But you pretend, you go at it in such a way that you are, in your mind, you are getting everything you want out of what you're doing. Like if you're, all right, we'll go into that later. Okay, Psalms 51, 10 through 13 says, I'll be reading out of the, what is this? This is the ESV, I think. It's different than I'm used to. But anyway. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. Cast me not away from your presence, and take not your Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation, and uphold me with a willing spirit. Then I will teach transgressors your way, and sinners will return to you. Now, if you go back to the top and read the little description of this, this is to the choir master, a psalm of David, when Nathan the prophet went to him after he had gone into Bathsheba. So, David is coming out of a very low spot in his life with this. So he didn't have this, did he? He wanted to create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. Cast me not away from your presence, and take not your Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation, and uphold me with a willing spirit. Then I will teach transgressors your ways, and sinners will return to you. This is one of my favorite, well, I say that almost constantly, I think, but one of my favorites. So, David wasn't here yet. This is what he wanted. This is where he was trying to get to. So he was visualizing getting his result. Let's go to, all right, I got it written down here. 2 Timothy 3:16. All scripture is breathed out by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and for training in righteousness, that the messenger of God may be complete, equipped for every good work. That's why I like this translation, because it's somewhere between the NIV and the King James. You know, it's not quite either. And it's changed just enough that when I read it, I find myself, apparently, I have it almost memorized. I mean, I couldn't say it, tell you the verse, but when I'm reading it in my head, I know what the next word is. And then when I'm reading out of this one, I find myself tripping over, because my eyes are reading one word and my mind is trying to say the other one, and it really makes me stop and consider the content again. But anyway, that was a freebie there. So anyway, all right, where was I? Oh, this thoroughly equipped, that the man of God is, or that can be also translated to messenger, that the messenger of God may be complete, equipped for every good work. I don't necessarily feel like that. I don't feel like I'm thoroughly equipped for, or complete. So, I think I'm in kind of in a unique position, I think, because I know what it is to train for something. Like when I was getting ready for my black belt, I was going to class 4 times a week. And, I mean, I was putting everything into every class. And I had people that were specifically watching me and making sure I was doing all I could do and all that. And so I know, you know, I was in pain from that, and I know what that effort that took to get there. Well, now I'm kind of in class. I shared this morning that I feel like I've totally slipped way back and am not all that well prepared or equipped. And I've been teaching the white belts, the lower levels, and I kind of migrated to their level. So I know what it is to be not training, because every time I go to class, I'm the teacher. And except for maybe occasionally on Tuesdays, and I sub on Tuesdays, and it's amazing how much you can not learn by, or unlearn by being a teacher all the time. So anyway, that's kind of interesting standpoint as well. So this training, this, I guess it means a lot to me right now, because I know where I've come from and where I'm at. And I feel like that even in my spiritual life. And because, you know, I just feel kind of stale, I guess. And then I saw these videos of Derek got them for me, and they are intense and very brutal and gut-wrenching, you could say. So, but I really like the free practice because of the partner. You have a partner in free practice. And unlike, this has always been a problem. We went to a Renaissance fair and there were samurais there and they were giving sword demonstrations and stuff and they were practicing on these rice, I don't know what they were, rice stocks, but they were mats, and they were all rolled up, and they would hack through these things, and it was approximately like a human neck, okay? And according to this guy, the samurai used to practice on the peasants. Well, you know, the peasants, you know, started running out maybe or something. So they changed the laws and said, well, you can't practice on the peasants anymore. So they started using these rice mats. And, you know, those are different times, just different social setup. But it's always been a problem. How do you practice martial arts without killing your partner? You know, I mean, how do you do that? So it's always, we try pads, you know, big, and then you're trying to move, and you know, it's kind of difficult. And you try a lot of modern martial arts do control, where you stop the technique just before or at the point of impact. And occasionally that ends up in some blood and stuff like that, but no, usually not death. And so it's always been a problem. How do you practice this? And you end up, if you get in a real situation, you end up acting out how you train. And police videos and stuff like this have proven this. There's a video, a cop video. He's pulled over this guy, and they know he has weapons in there, and he's in the process of breaking the window with his baton, and he takes his gun, which is in the other hand, not even using that hand, and he sets it on the ground and continues breaking the window, and then the shot comes out, hits him in the head, and he dies from that. And they have this all on video. And why in the world did he set his gun on the ground? Well, comes to find out, this guy, for the last 5 years, this veteran cop, knows what he's doing. This isn't his first time around. Has been training in paintball. And he's like a world-class paintballer. And every time you do an obstacle in paintball, you lay your gun down. And then you do the obstacle. And then you come back and you pick up your gun. So for the last 5 years, he's been training. Lay your gun down. Do the obstacle. And then you go back and get your gun. Well, it got him killed in this instance. Another example was knife disarming. You know, someone comes at you with a knife. There's certain techniques you can do. You end up with a knife, and they don't. And you practice this over and over in class. And, well, in class, you disarm your partner, hand them back the knife, and then you go on and you keep practicing. You hand them back the knife, your turn for a while more, and then you get out in real life, and I guess this has actually happened. Cop takes, disarm the person, and hands them the weapon back. Then there's a police officer who was at the range. He's practicing. He's practicing his draw. So he has his gun, puts it in his holster. He draws it out, shoots one shot, puts it back. Draws his gun, shoots one shot, puts it back. And that's the way he practiced all the time. He gets in an actual shootout in a bank robbery or something like that. Draws his gun out, takes a shot, and in horror, he can't stop himself. He reholsters his gun, can't take the next shot until he pulls it back out of his holster again. And, well, he survived that. Needless to say, he changed his practicing techniques. Because your brain does what you practice. Okay, so where I'm going with this is, so we as Christians, when we have an opportunity, a Jesus moment, or, you know, you're a customer or something, you know, something comes up where you, like, hey, this is an opportunity here, you can talk to this person about Christ. How have we been training? How have we been training? Well, we sit around and we wait for somebody else to answer the question. And so we freeze, maybe. Maybe we freeze. So what's happening when you freeze? This happens all the time, too. A person gets in a crisis, they're getting mugged or something, and they just freeze. They don't do anything. Well, if your brain has never been there, you can't, you don't know what to do, so you freeze, you stop. It's an instinct of some sort that is quite annoying at times, but you freeze. I remember one time when as a boy, we were playing something in the house we probably shouldn't have been, and the chimney got knocked off of the kerosene lamp, you know, and it falls over, and it's rolling. It's on the top of a dresser, and it's rolling off to the side, and I just stand there and I watch it. You know, I had the time. I could have grabbed it and caught it. And I remember standing there like, why didn't I reach out and grab it? Then I froze. I froze. So, this free practice is a different way of practicing, where it's not full contact. We're not breaking bones and bruises. And I mean, there's places that do that, where they just go at it, you know, fang and tooth. And then there's other places where they, our school, where it's supposed to be no contact, where, you know, you stop, you know, you're working on stopping just before you get there. And then they break out the pads sometimes, and they'll go full contact with the pads. But these are all different ways to control things. Well, this free practice, what I thought was so ingenious about it was they take the velocity out of it. They do everything slow motion. And the very important part, this is critical, is the partner. The partner is giving, has agreed that you don't hit me full speed, and I will give you a result like you hit me full speed. So, take the groin shot, you know, the dreaded groin. Okay? So, they step in and drive the shin right into the groin, you know, slow motion, okay? And the partner jumps back, and it looks just like Funniest Home Videos. If you've watched Funniest Home Videos, you know exactly how somebody reacts when they get hit in the groin. So they grab their groin, and the chin goes up, and they're on the ground. Okay? And that's how they practice. And that way, you get that. So why can't we do that here? I mean, taking the groin out of the picture. Why can't we do that? Why can't we practice. So, what is the reason for your hope? You know, how many of you have been asked that question where it wasn't high pressure? Where you had time to think, all right, slow motion, so the pressure's off. How am I going to react to this? What is the right answer to that? All right, I got that. And then I'm going to follow through, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to give you my answer. And then, you know, I don't know. This is new territory, so I don't know exactly what the response to that would be. But your partner has to agree to give you a good result, or else you're not going to do it. Because, see, our class is kind of like this. Our class is kind of like this. We, you know, it's open for discussion and stuff like that. But who talks? It's the people who are pretty knowledgeable, and it's the people who are willing to put themselves out there. The introverts aren't talking. They're not making the comments, and they're not doing that. Do they need to know how to react to this kind of stuff? Yeah, they need to know how to react to this stuff. So we need to have the partner is very important in this. Partner has to give. We want accurate responses, or that's not the word I want. Result, accurate results. So we want real results. Like, how's a person really going to respond to this? And they have the agreement is, I am not, this isn't a competition. This is a teamwork where I'm going to give you the result, and then that gives you the opportunity to respond to that and move on to the next move. Because they never stop at a groin strike. Because this is asocial violence. I mean, this is where you don't normally just lay into somebody's groin and lay them out on the sidewalk. This is where your life is in danger. Okay, you lay it into their groin, and then their chin comes up. So then their throat's open. So then you crush their throat, and then they give you a result for that. And then, you know, so it just goes on and on. So that's what we want to do here. You want to do the practice so that when we're out in the real world, your brain, somebody asks you, so why do you believe that baptism is necessary? And then you don't go, oh, I wish Greg was here. No. You go, you know, this is why, you know, this is why I believe it is. And then they give you a result. And then your brain goes, oh, we've been here before. We've done this. We've practiced this. So then the answer is easier to come to you, the result. They've had people, several people, who've never been in a fight in their life. And they've gone through this program for one weekend. And then they got into a violent encounter. And they come out on top. And they took their assailant to non-functional. And just a training for a weekend. Now, he says that's kind of unusual. Usually most people need more training than that. But anyway, so the idea is your brain gets to go to this place that's scary to you and is not comfortable for you. But it gets to go there while it's not a crisis. It's not a full-blown adrenaline rush and your brain is freezing up. It's with a person who you trust and you know that they aren't going to hurt you or harm you. And then you get to slowly and methodically work your way through the situation so that you can, so your brain knows, I've been here before. And then when it happens in real life, you can react calmly and methodically to a situation that normally you would go, oh, and start spazzing out. So that's what I'm excited about. And I'm totally off my notes here now. Okay. So, all right. The first thing I thought of is evangelists. How do we train evangelists? How do you train your evangelist? That's kind of a play on the movie. So, this is what I think. I think they do something similar to this. They throw the new evangelist in a car with an old evangelist, and they drive for hours to Arizona. And they talk, of course. No radio is allowed. And they talk and discuss, because these are two intensive individuals. What evangelist have you met that wasn't an intense individual? I mean, some of them are laid back, but I mean, they are. I mean, why do we only have six evangelists anyway? I mean, we maybe have more than that, but because not everybody wants to devote their whole life to be an evangelist. I mean, that is, think of the requirement that takes. And anyway, so these are intense individuals, so they play well into this. And they put them in a car for several hours at a time with another evangelist, and then they jump right into the deep end of the pool when they get to wherever they're going, and they're solving church problems, and, you know, it's just, I mean, they either sink or swim, it seems like. They don't get a lot of, I mean, I've never heard of an evangelist. It's just like somebody says, I want to be an evangelist. You're appointed. And here you go. Here's a sharp, pointy object. Go out and figure out how it works. You know? And I don't think it would work too well. But I think the mentor is what saves them. Because they have people who do work with them. Okay. I skipped over. Well. Okay. I was going to read to you. Proverbs 27:17 says, iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. And I've never understood that. It's like, how's iron sharpen iron? When I sharpen iron, I use stone. You know? And I got thinking about this yesterday. It's like, well, you know, that isn't exactly... When they use iron to sharpen iron, it's a hammer and an anvil. And they hammer the edge, and they bring the edge out thinner. And so it gets sharp. And that's how they sharpen it with iron. And one man sharpens another. So if you have two men together, or human beings together, and they're willing to work together, it's a great thing. Training partners. People get discouraged and down, like, oh, I don't want to get out of bed and go running this morning. And then your cell phone rings and it's your running partner, and your running partner says, come on, let's go, I'm waiting for you outside. And so then you get up and go outside and run. You know. So one man sharpens another. So, where could we go with this? It needs to be a partner you trust. Okay? So I would think husbands and wives would work fairly well together on this. Who would know you better than a husband or wife? And I can see the downfall of that, because sometimes you work better with somebody you don't know so well. But but you could work together, and you can practice. I mean, what is to say we couldn't, you and your partner, couldn't practice doing a Bible study together? You could run through the whole thing, and I hate to say the other one could play the devil's advocate, because I think that can go too far the other way, and depending on personalities and stuff like that, that would not work at all. But you could run through the whole Bible study, and then when somebody asks you to have a Bible study, or you ask somebody to have a Bible study, and they say yes, you don't have a panic attack, because you really don't have any idea what you're getting into. You could run through the whole thing yourself and have it pre-done. I know when Greg kind of did that with Joy and I, and Tanya, and I can't remember how many other people ended up jumping in on that Bible study. But, I mean, we did that for years, right? I think it lasted for years. And I learned so much from that. Greg at first was doing it all, and we were just sitting there and looking smart. And then eventually, I think Greg quit coming, and we took over, and we kept starting over and over again, because new people would start jumping in at various points. And that was great. I don't think any one of them was the same twice, other than we had the same outline we were trying to follow. But there's all kinds of rabbit trails all over the place. And those are good. And then also, that's what we could do with each other. I mean, what if we set up a situation where you have your pre-made rabbit hole where you jump into it and see where it goes. And you have the situation set up where it goes nice and slow, and you can, it's an instructing and a, or a learning situation. And the student is the one doing the teaching, so to speak, if, or the leading. Maybe I should say the leading. They're the ones doing the leading. And then at some point in the video, they have this preset. I was watching the videos. It shows these two guys, and it was all quiet, and they were just, you know, destroying each other over and over. One guy would just destroy the other one, and then it didn't seem to make sense to me at first, and then the other one would start destroying the other one, and they just went, and they just kept going back and forth all the way through this, and you could do that with this too. You could have some, and they have this prearranged signal where they step away from the other person, then the person knows that they've switched turns. But we could do that here. We could have, all right, I'm going to chase this question for so many times, and then it'll be your turn, and you chase the question for so many times. And that would be good for both people because you would see different perspectives on the same question. Okay, now, I have, we're going to read first, all right, I have this one written down also. 1 Peter 1:13 says, therefore, preparing your minds for action and being sober-minded, set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Over and over, I got more verses than I brought, but that talks about training and practice. And I know from my Taekwondo that showing up twice a week is not practice. Okay, it may keep you in the ball game, but it's not practice. It's not going to show progress. You're not going to show progress. So, I really want to stress the training and the practice, because I think that is very, very important. Let's go to 1 John 2:28. 1 John. And 28, and then we're going to read through 13, I believe. No, verse 10. Okay. Now think it, or when I read this, notice all the times, and it goes good and evil, all the times you hear practice. Okay. Which, I don't know if this one uses training or not. But anyway. And now, little children, abide in him, so that when he appears, we may have confidence and not shrink from him in shame at his coming. Now, I'm going to... Got a few minutes here. you know, I'm at a point in my training with Taekwondo that if I had Master Ferguson was to show up at my class, I would feel very uncomfortable because he's my mentor. He's my the guy I ask for. If I'm going to test, I ask him if I can test and all that kind of stuff. And stuff like that. So he's my superior. If he was to show up at my class, I would feel very uncomfortable with him there, because I would I feel like my training has slipped to where I think I can teach white belts, and yellow belts, and orange belts, but anything much more than that, and I'm pushing my my training. So, what's it say here? Now, little children, abide in him, so that when he appears, we may have confidence and not shrink from him in shame at his coming. This goes right along with Derek's thoughts. You know, when he shows up, it's going to be like that soldier popping in the door and surprising somebody. And we want to be in a place, in a condition where we just run to them and show our love to them. That's where we want to be. Okay, verse 29. If you know that he is righteous, you may be sure that everyone who practices righteousness has been born of him. See what kind of love the Father has given to us, that we should be called children of God, and so we are. The reason why the world does not know us is that it did not know him. Beloved, we are God's children now, and what we will be has not yet appeared. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him as he is. And everyone who thus hopes in him purifies himself as he is pure. Everyone who makes a practice of sinning also practices lawlessness. That's interesting, isn't it? Everyone who makes a practice of sinning also practices lawlessness. Sin is lawlessness. You know that he appeared in order to take away sins, and in him there is no sin. No one who abides in him keeps on sinning. No one who keeps on sinning has either seen him or known him. Little children, let no one deceive you. Whoever practices righteousness is righteous as he is righteous. Whoever makes a practice of sinning is of the devil, for the devil has been sinning from the beginning. The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the works of the devil. No one born of God makes a practice of sinning, for God's seed abides in him. He cannot keep on sinning because he has been born of God. By this it is evident who are the children of God and who are the children of the devil. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is the one who does not love his brother. We all have different styles of learning and going about things. I know there's some people that just can't pick something up. They just can't figure it out until they can get their hands on it and play with it. And there's other people who can just hear something and they got it, and you know, it's theirs. And you know, there's visual learners, there's, I don't know all the names for them, but all kinds of different styles. So find something that works for you and use it, because we need to practice righteousness. I mean, you're either doing one or the other. You're either practicing righteousness or you're practicing evil. So let's practice the righteousness. I have one more verse, 2 Timothy 2:22-26. So flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord. So you got partners, right? From a pure heart. Have nothing to do with foolish, ignorant controversies. You know that they breed quarrels, and the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but kind to everyone, able to teach, patiently enduring evil, correcting his opponents with gentleness. God may perhaps grant them repentance, leading to a knowledge of the truth, and that they may come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil after being captured by him to do his will. So this sums up, I think, what I'm trying to say is practice. Find a way that works for you and practice and then help those around you and help them practice. And one of this quotes or the sayings or whatever, the idea behind this philosophy of sparring or whatever it is, was the person with the cleanest, clearest objective is the most likely to succeed. And they demonstrated that with one guy had a knife, and all he was told to do was stab. And the other guy was told, all right, I want you to block, and then I want you to disarm him, and several other things, and all this stuff. And he said, go. Well, needless to say, the guy who was supposed to block and counter and all that stuff ended up, in theory, dying, because the other guy, all he had to do was swing that knife. And the same thing with us. All we got to do is tell the truth. All we got to do is, if we get a little opportunity, is take it and lay the truth in there. You know, stab them with it, I guess, if you will. And just... that, and if that's our objective, it's just that one opportunity, put the truth there. And if they take it and go with it and give us another opportunity, then take that opportunity and lay the truth in there again. So just keep your goals simple. Just take it one step at a time. If you get an opportunity, don't start panicking and say, oh, how am I going to get this person baptized, or you know, you're jumping way ahead. So just lay it in there, the truth in there, and let it do its work. So anyway, I hope you got something out of that. Anyway, so we'll offer the invitation at this time. If there's anybody who wants to make themselves right with God or needs anything from the church, they can come forward as we stand and sing the closing song.